Three great companies sponsor this program, including Grasshopper.com. It's a virtual phone system that entrepreneurs like me love. Imagine traveling the world and having a phone number that can reach you wherever you are. Imagine hiring a new employee and giving them an extension at your company's main number so they can be reached wherever they are in the world and on whatever phone they prefer. Imagine saving time with features like voicemail that you can read. See how you can do it all at grasshopper.com. Shopify is a second sponsor, and check out these gorgeous stores. They're all built on Shopify.com's platform. Shopify gives you beautiful stores that encourage your customers to buy. And Shopify gives you a backend that helps you manage your store professionally. Go to Shopify.com and see it all. Finally, Lose It or Lose It is a site created by Mixergy listeners like you. That's loseitorloseit.com. It motivates you to lose weight by wagering loads of money on your weight goal. How much more likely are you to lose weight if there's money on the line? Check them out. Even if you're not interested in losing weight, I think you've got to see this clever new approach. Loseitorloseit.com. Here's the program. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart. You guys know the goal here. It's to bring a different entrepreneur every day, find out how he or she built their business, learn about their experiences, learn about what worked, find out what didn't work, and take all those ideas and hand them to you so that you can go out there and build an incredible company yourself and come back here and do what today's guest is doing. Teach others how you did it so that they can go out and build their own companies. Today's guest is Patrick Buckley. He is the winning co-founder of the Build a Business contest that Shopify put on with Tim Ferriss. The contest was open to new companies and gave $100,000 to the new store that earned the most revenue. Patrick is a tech entrepreneur who won this contest by creating something that's more low-tech than high-tech. His product is called the Dodo Case, and it's an iPad case which is made by hand, and it's incredibly beautiful. I can't wait for him to show you. First of all, Patrick, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
We talked before this interview about whether you should give the revenue or not. I've said to you that I think you should give the revenue because it'll make an impression on people and let them see how strong and how great a company you built here. So how much have you made?
So in our first 3 months, we're almost at $1 million in revenue.
Wow. And this company is just about over 3 months old.
Yep.
When did you get the idea?
We got the idea about halfway between when the iPad was initially announced and when it was launched. I started prototyping maybe 2.5 weeks before the launch and had one product. By the time the launch came around, I threw it up on Shopify. I didn't really know how I was going to make a lot of them, but I figured if it was popular, I'd sort that out.
And it did end up being popular, and I want to find out about the growth, and I want to find out how you got there. But you're a tech guy, and we'll talk about your previous tech experience. You probably could have built a whole site yourself. Why'd you throw it up on Shopify?
Well, I mean, I'm an engineer by training, but I'm not a programmer, and I wanted to be able to focus on what I was good at. And you know, Shopify was great because they let me do that. Really, you know, they took all of the high tech out of the business, and I was able to focus on the low tech part of it.
And the low tech is, let's show the iPad yeah. case, and then I got to ask you about who put this thing together for you because it looks stunning. Let's show it to people.
And so this is the back of it. Mm-hmm. In the front, it's got the elastic strap. You open it up, and there's your iPad in there.
Yeah.
How well you see that. And the tray is made out of bamboo, and you know, we mill that and then hand finish it here in San Francisco. Every piece of this product's made locally in San Francisco.
And it's a bookbinder who put that. Is that leather on there?
It's a faux leather. It's a Morocco cloth. It feels like a leather cover in your hand.
You know, but it does just feel like a leather cover because I looked at reviews and many of them said it was a leather cover, so it really must come off as leather. But it's on by a binder, a book
yeah,
binder.
We're working with actually one of the last of three book binders in San Francisco, by my count. I looked high and low for book binders, and this guy was by far the best. He's been doing it for 40 years, and he's a really good guy, and he was kind of like his business was really slowing down because, you know, not a lot of people are making books anymore. And he's recently hired 14 people to make Dovercase covers. So, you know, we're trying to, part of our thing is we want to help preserve the art of book binding. And, you know, we're making a small dent here in San Francisco.
And like I said, people are loving it. Kevin Rose made a video about it that made me want it in the worst way. Let's see. Engadget called it the Rolls Royce of iPad cases. Crunch Gear said, I think this was their headline, the iPad Dodo case wins our hearts and money. iPad case designers, they said, you're done. Pick up and go home. We don't need you anymore. Man, you must have loved that.
Yeah, I mean, I can't complain about reviews like that. So,
how'd you get those guys? How'd you even get on their radar?
So, I mean, part of the whole idea about doing this as a business was we knew that there was a really unique opportunity just in the way that Apple launches its products. You know, there's a lot of build up to this one day event, and you have all of these customers basically handed to you on a plate waiting outside Apple stores lined up. You know, these are the most fanatical customers, and they're exactly the people you want to get. So we actually started, you know, kickstarted our marketing by creating, actually I've got one right here, these little handouts. It's basically a postcard. It looks just like our product. It's got a little coupon code on the inside. And we went on Craigslist and we found, you know, we found people in different cities to basically go out to Apple stores and hand these out. And we gave everyone a code so we could track who sold what, and we gave them a commission on whatever they could sell. So, you know, they only got paid on what orders they could generate. So it was very little risk for us. And we were able to get, you know, college students and, you know, people who are just enthusiastic and energetic about a new Apple product. And so they went out and they evangelized our product before we even had any product. We'd made basically two cases at that point. And, you know, that just snowballed, really. And that was kind of, I think we spent about $500 on marketing, and that's it.
Where did $500 go?
It went to paying the commissions to these street teams, basically.
Oh, those street teams only cost you $500?
Yeah, because I mean, what ended up happening was they didn't generate a lot of sales themselves, but, you know, one or two of them ended up giving out coupons to people who were bloggers. One of the two, the unofficial Apple blog people, got our case using one of these coupon codes, and then wrote a post that said, "I love the case; it's great." And that alone generated like 1,500 sales in one day, just that one post. So I mean, that was really a, you know, the ripple effect from that was big.
How'd you find the college students? I always ask very tactical questions, which I'm sure frustrates people, but I'm curious. How'd you find them?
I mean, just Craigslist postings, really. Okay. I mean, we went on Craigslist in different cities, and I guess it's slightly, you know, against the terms of service for Craigslist, but we only did it in maybe 10 different cities. And we said, hey, you know, do you like Apple products? You want to be involved in the, you know, the excitement of the launch of the iPad? Like, here's the deal. We'll send you this marketing material, and you'll get paid for every case you can sell. And, you know, we had a lot of people who were interested in it, so we just signed them up.
I'm writing notes, by the way, as you talk. I'm sure if people see me, they're wondering why I'm looking away. I don't know how interviewers on TV can do it, how they can take in the information you're giving, plus think about the questions that they have coming up and make sure that they ask those questions. And on top of that, I have to deal with all the Skype that's coming in. That was my wife calling, and people heard that on Skype. this is home of the ambitious upstart and home of the still an upstart ambitious interviewer. I mentioned earlier that you were a high-tech entrepreneur. What was the company that you were involved with before?
I was involved with WebMind. They built a browser add-on for Firefox that basically was kind of, it started as a TiVo for the web and then kind of morphed into personalize your Google search results page.
And your initial funding came from Y Combinator, right?
Yeah, we were a Y Combinator-backed backed company, and that was kind of really my first forte into being an entrepreneur, was going through Y Combinator.
How do you compare the difference between building something that's software to building something that you have to actually make and touch and ship and take orders on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, physical products don't scale as easily as software, but everyone still needs to use physical products every day. And I actually really think that you shouldn't look at the world as software, hardware. If you can figure out a way to build a business that utilizes the power of the internet as a communications tool to reach customers, and you have a really awesome physical product that people want to buy, then you should use one to leverage the other, in my opinion.
You said I guess we did an interview before, and I didn't like the technology, so we redid it. Thanks for that. For some reason, we were having a bad connection. But I have a note here from that conversation where you said you had a string of businesses after WebMind. What were you up to?
Yeah, from WebMind, I published this cookbook. It was called The Hungry Scientist Handbook, which was a collection of kind of tech world meets foodie world, edible electronic birthday cakes and cryogenic ice cream. And, that was a real focus for me for a while to promote that. And it looked like it might get turned into a television show, like a Mythbusters of food kind of thing. But that ended up evaporating with the economic crisis because everybody stopped making television shows, or at least signing new television shows. And, so I bounced from that into a photography business called EventPod, which was utilizing iFi cards, these wireless SD memory cards. That the basic concept was to crowdsource your wedding photography. So you'd hand these cards out to your wedding guests. People would take photos. Everyone's photos would get beamed instantly to one place, and you'd have everybody's photos. So I did that. I did a Facebook app for high school rowers called Roaster. I was basically like the shotgun approach. I was, I probably had three or four kind of non-starters or things that I tried that never really kind of gained momentum. None of them have kind of died. They're still kind of back burner, but DodoCase is definitely the most successful out of anything I've done in the past 2.5 years.
Any of those previous companies make money?
There was another one actually that is making money called appsto.re. It's App Store with a .re at the end. And it's iPhone app URL shortening service that lets people actually do analytics on like where their traffic's coming from and how it's converting once people land inside of iTunes. And that my partner on that's still working on that, and it's going really well. I guess I kind of like had a trajectory where things seemed to get, each time I gave it a new attempt, it got better and better. But nothing that was like a living wage, until DodoCase. Now I'm able to pay my bills and do all the stuff that regular people do.
I know App Store. I've seen a lot about it in blogs, and my friends who have apps have used it as their URL shortener. I didn't realize you were the guy behind it.
Yeah, well, me and my buddy Ohad.
And this is over how many years that you've built all these businesses? In between WebMind and now was how long?
So I started WebMind right at the beginning of 2008. So it's basically been 2.5 years.
How can you in 2.5 years launch so many businesses?
I don't know. I guess you have to be ADD or something.
But even to see it through, is it that you're able to partner with good people? I noticed that every one of these ideas has a partner, has somebody who's in it with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that's really key. No one has every skill they need to build a successful business. And so I've always looked for people who complement my set of skills. And I guess you really need to know kind of what your weaknesses are in order to find a good partner. So you have to be kind of really honest with yourself. So, with DodoCase, I've got Craig Dalton. He's a fantastic co-founder. And we now have an operations guy, Mark Manning, who's also, awesome guy. And so, combine the three of us really, it's like a well-oiled machine. Everyone has their part that they're really good at. So,
how do you find so many co-founders? I had Paul Graham, founder of Y Combinator, here. It's one of the questions I asked him. It's one of the things that he said, you should spend as much time as you need to find a co-founder. And for many people, as much time as they need is a long, long time. Here you are finding co-founder for this idea, for that idea. How are you finding so many?
That's a good question. I don't know. In some ways, I guess I'm just really lucky. In other ways, I make sure that I'm out there meeting people, and a lot of the people that I actually pattern that's just for me. A lot of people that I've founded companies with are people that I've been on sports teams with or trained with. So there's actually, for me, it's a lot of it comes out of being involved with, like, you know, triathlons and rowing and, you know, sporty stuff. So I don't know if that's, you know, a cause and effect or what, but a lot of people that I found companies with happen to be people that I've, you know, struggled with on a team or done something like that.
And you're just creating a business with them, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, you've learned something and you can move on to the next one.
Yeah, and I mean, every company that I've started, even if it hasn't been a, you know, a great success, everyone's still friends at the end of it. And we've all learned something, and I think everyone that I've done business with is going to have a success eventually. You just have to keep trying.
And there are three partners total on this business, on DodoCase?
On DodoCase, yeah. Craig was my initial co-founder, and then we've built the team up a little bit since then.
How'd you find him? How'd you find Craig?
Craig, I've known Craig for about 3 or 4 years. We trained for Ironman triathlons together.
Get out.
Yeah.
Which ones have you done? I'm dying to do my first Ironman.
I did Ironman Canada two years in a row, but I haven't done it in a while, so I'm way
out of
shape.
How long did it take you?
My first year I did it in about 11:15.
Is the cutoff 17 hours or 24 hours for that? Do you know?
I think it's 18 hours. Okay. I think it's 18 hours.
I don't want to get sidetracked, but I'm dying to do it, and I've got a feeling that it's going to take me until the cutoff time. Everyone else will be racing each other. I'm racing the cutoff time, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
What does the DodoCase cost? Not to make, but what do you charge for it?
So the DodoCase, it was $50. We recently raised our price to $59.95.
I was going to say, at $50, were you making a profit on that thing?
I mean, you know, we don't have cheap cost of goods, or, you know, we pay really well-trained craftspeople to build our products. So, you know, we're not going to China and trying to, like, skimp on every cent, but we, you know, so our costs are higher than probably most other case makers, but we're reinvesting in quality, and then also the ability to reach customers directly and not have to, you know, split up our revenue and give some to distributors and retailers. That helps a lot.
You know what? It really is craftspeople. I saw this one guy. Sometimes online I just get sucked into a video. I was doing research for you, and I got sucked into a couple of videos. First of all, Kevin Rose. There's no better promoter for a product than Kevin Rose. He's just walking me through it. He's showing me how I could put it up on a desk so I can type on it. And he's just doing a review. But meanwhile, if he's selling it, I want to buy anything that he's got to sell. And this was a great product for him to show off, because he got to show the craftsmanship, the bamboo. Anyway, the second video I saw is a bookbinder putting the faux leather around the cover and binding it to the cover. And this thing, I was sitting there going, that must cost Patrick an arm and a leg. And how do you even scale up something like that? In fact, how do you scale up a business that depends on craftspeople?
Well, first is to find someone who's flexible and willing to work with you closely. And Gabby, our bookbinder, is a tremendous guy. He's been doing bookbinding for 40 years, and he started his business when there were 60 employees, and it went all the way down to where it was only 5 or 6 employees, and his boss was going to shut the shop down, and he decided to buy the business and run it himself. And so when we found him, he was working by himself, basically doing custom binding for photographers and yearbooks and things like that. But he had seen the days when it was a real production line, so he was able to kind of take our vision and, you know, make us the first 1,000 products. But then, you know, he understood what production looked like. He was able to take that, and now he's hired, like I said, 14 people, and he's really got a fantastic operation. He's got his daughters in there. He's teaching them how to do the business. So who knows, maybe one day, you know, it'll be passed on to the next generation of bookbinders in the Gabby's family.
And is he able to train people and get them up and running quickly? How long does it take him to get a new person on?
I mean, that was a little bit of a painful transition. I mean, we got this huge spike at the beginning of May, where we had like 2,000 orders in the course of 2 days. And at that point, it was basically me putting these things together in my living room. Maybe I was lucky to be making 40 of them a day. And then I was like, oh my God, we're never going to be able to deliver all these. But over that, we gave ourselves this 4 to 6 week window. And over that period, Gabby, he basically took the burden off of us and terms of figuring out how to make the covers, and then we were able to focus on how are we going to make all these wooden trays, and combined, you know, just working with good people is a secret. He did his part, and he was really you know, trustworthy and did a high quality job, and we were able to focus on the other part.
What kind of marketing do you do?
Well, right now, I mean, we actually haven't done any marketing besides the initial launch, and that's basically because, I mean, we can't make these products fast enough yet. So we've been really focused on scaling the production and the manufacturing, but we're looking at how we're gonna, you know, make a more sustainable marketing effort. We have some ideas, but we're waiting until our production supply can meet any demand that we try and drum up.
How do you grow from here?
You know, I think that there's a number of things we can do. You know, we have a bunch of customization in the works, and we're planning on letting people create different colors and different styles. And yeah, anything you can do with a book, you can do with our product. I think corporate is a big opportunity for us. People who want to put, you know, their corporate emblem on it, or universities who want to create custom editions for their school. I think it's going to be a big educational market. And then, I mean, they're supposed to sell 17 million iPads in the first year. So that's, you know, I wish I could make 17 million Dodo cases. So I think there's a lot of room to just grow with the iPad. But, you know, Google's going to have an iPad type of device soon, and so will a lot of other people. I think the whole category of digital slate is one that's here to stay. So,
what about competitors? Can somebody watching this say, well, you know, I'm going to go out there and I'll create my own version of this? You don't own the design?
Yeah, sure. I mean, any, you know, business is about competition, so we welcome people and we'll just do our best to compete with them. I mean, I think a real differentiator for our product is you know, that we really are about trying to preserve this tradition of bookbinding. And so if someone can appreciate that, and I think consumers do appreciate that, you know, they'll hopefully choose our case over just something that's stamped out of a factory in China.
Do you have many competitors who are doing this right now? Not this way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know of too many. Obviously, there are a lot of people making cases right now, so there's no shortage of iPad cases. I don't know if anyone's doing it in the same way we're doing it. We're focusing on the quality as much as we are. Like I said, you know, because we can sell direct to the customer, we are able to reinvest a lot of the profits into the quality of the product. So, you know, you wouldn't be able to buy in a store the quality of product that we can create because the guy who's making that has to make it so cheaply in order to get it into retail channels that the quality diminishes.
Does that mean that you won't be able to go into retail in the future?
You know, we're not ruling it out, but we would have to, and we're at the beginning of the whole process. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be ways in which we can change our product. And once we get to high enough quantities, maybe, yeah, it will get cheaper, but the price will probably have to go up if it goes into retail channels.
You said earlier that you paid high school students or college students based on how many they sold. Does Shopify allow you to do that? They keep track of orders and coupons and all that?
Yeah, Shopify's got some great tools so that you can create coupon codes, basically, you know, 10% off or $5 off or whatever. So we basically, these flyers that we made had a, you know, get the Dodo case with 10% off. And then when someone used that coupon code, we know every marketer had a specific code. So we know if that person used the code, it was associated with, you know, person who was working at store X in, you know, Chicago or whatever it was.
Can you tell me a little bit more about Shopify as a platform? I've used it and I've talked it up because they were sponsors of mine, but I want other people to find out what it's like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it makes it really easy to get up and running. And we have a pretty simple, you know, e-commerce site. It's one product. but Shopify, you know, they can support lots of different SKUs. And So, I mean, if you want to build a business selling a lot of different products, you know, you can definitely do that on Shopify. Like I said, we are just one product company right now. Hopefully that'll change, but initially that's all we launched with. But you know, I think the real power of Shopify is in the support and in the forums and in being able to get your questions or get your questions answered quickly.
What kind of support did you need?
Well, you know, there's always something that comes up. You know, like we had some problems with merchant processing, like PayPal and Google Checkout were holding a lot of our money. Because we're a new company, we were growing quickly, they wanted to make sure we weren't, you know, frauds or whatever. But that, you know, just being able to ping the Shopify folks and say, hey, you know, how would you help? Could you help us with this? Or what would you do in this case? That kind of thing was great. But also just like, you know, functionality of the site, we'd say, hey, guys, we'd love for it to be able to do this. And they would say, hey, all right, we'll make it do that. they were fantastic in that regard.
You know, we talked about this in the pre-interview last week. We're both so surprised that somebody didn't game this contest. And what did you think was going to happen? How did you think someone would win the 100,000?
I mean, I thought it was going to be some, like, you know, monster AdWords campaign where somebody was basically like selling stuff at a loss, maybe even just to kind of, you know, feed the whole system and get lots of sales and basically build a business that wasn't profitable. It was just like gaming the rules of the contest. So, I mean, I didn't have much hope when I started that I was going to win the contest. I just figured, you know, this contest is a good focal point for building an e-commerce business, and I'll just focus on, like, you know, what I think will be a good business. And but yeah, I mean, I was totally surprised that it wasn't some kind of crazy affiliate marketing pyramid scheme thing.
I thought it would be somebody selling mattresses maybe at a loss. Mattresses have a high price point. This contest was based on revenue. I figured they would just slam those things, get them out the door, end up with 100,000 and the publicity that comes from it, and then take it and go do something else.
Yeah, I thought it would be a drop shipping thing, you know, somebody that never even actually touches their product. They just buy it and, you know,
I don't know the contest rules specifically, but I would think that that would be okay with them. They do enable drop shipping and they work with dropshippers, but I didn't think that it would be a guy who came out of nowhere with a new idea and ended up selling about $1 million worth of cases.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Yeah, you're as surprised as I am.
Did you start because of the contest?
I did, actually, yeah.
The contest got you going? The contest said, well, what can I sell?
It really did. I mean, back in December, I started thinking about, you know, God, I've been doing all these software things, and I can't seem to make any money doing software, even though software scales, and it's so scalable, it doesn't scale when you're not making any money. So I decided, you know, maybe I'll just get back to kind of the meat and potatoes of business and try and do something where I actually have a physical product. And when I saw I had read the 4-hour work week a couple months prior. And so, you know, I was kind of digesting it, I guess. And, you know, I tossed around a couple ideas with friends. I live in this house with like 10 people, so and a lot of them are entrepreneurs, so we're always tossing around ideas. And I bounced between thinking about making a marketplace to sell coffee beans online, because I was like, why can't I get my, you know, favorite coffee beans from Boston where I went to college without having to actually be in the store? Be some way to get those online. But then I realized nobody's going to spend $5 to ship $10 or $15 worth of coffee beans. So I tossed that idea. And then, you know, it just kind of emerged. And then the iPad came out and everybody, you know, I think a good strategy for a startup is to ride on the coattails of someone else's marketing. And, you know, I think that we were definitely a case of that. Apple's doing obviously all the heavy lifting.
Tell me a little bit more about this mansion that you're in, and hopefully before the interview is done, we'll get to see you spin the computer around and have a look.
Yeah. So, I mean, in true Y Combinator spirit, it started with Y Combinator. Me and a couple of the guys in my class all were living together, 5 or 6 of us in this tiny little 2-bedroom house, and then we upgraded to this awesome mansion on the top of Pack Heights. It's like a 6,000 square foot mansion that has bay views. I'm sitting in the library right now. We have an elevator in our house. and, you know, we found it on Craigslist and we're like, we got to make this happen. So we, you know, maybe this is another reason I'm good at finding co-founders. I just opened up my Rolodex and was like, who wants to move into an awesome mansion? And we got like the coolest group of people, half of which I've been, you know, I've known since high school. A bunch of them I went to college with, you know, so it's like my wife's actually the only woman in the house. So she's like the queen of the roost.
I was going to ask you about that. So you're a married guy who's got his wife in the house with all these dudes?
Yeah, yeah.
And the guys bring home girls?
The guys, you know, when we moved in, the rule was no girlfriends were allowed to move into the house. So my wife was grandfathered into the whole situation.
I see. I can't believe she puts up with all this stuff. What's it like living around the house with all these guys?
It's awesome. You know, it's just really inspiring to see everybody kind of working on their individual projects. And it's such a diverse group of skill sets that, you know, you can bounce ideas off of people. And it's also good just, you know, to keep spirits high because it's not always, you know, happy times when you're starting a business. So it's good to have other people to just kind of like, you know, cheer you up or get you through the tough times.
Do you guys talk business a lot?
You know, yeah, I would say it's a healthy mix, but you know, we're always tossing around ideas. You know, it's a fun environment.
Who else is in the house that we might know?
So Justin Santa Barbara, who's a Y Combinator guy in my batch from Fathom DB. He's in the house. Jason Toy, who has been working on a variety of things. He's a Ruby developer. And then we've got a VC in the house.
Which VC is living in the house with you guys?
I don't know if he wants me to reveal his name, so I'm going to
really? Can you say what firm?
No, I shouldn't.
Top-tier firm? Or?
Yeah, it's a good firm.
It's a good firm. Interesting. Yeah. Wow, how much are you guys charging for rent?
We got in trouble for that, you know, releasing that. It got out on some blog that we were living in this mansion in Pack Heights, and our landlord got upset. So I shouldn't reveal too many details.
Can you give us a rough estimate of what it costs to live in a place like that? It sounds pretty expensive.
Well, I can tell you that I pay, you know, way less than $1,000 a month.
Oh, okay. All right. And that's for you and your wife?
Yeah.
You guys have your own bathroom, or does she have to deal with the other guys peeing on the toilet seat?
Yeah, no, we have our own bathroom. She's got her own closet. It's like a pretty good setup. Yeah.
Wow. You're talking about some of the – sorry?
Oh, I was just going to say we definitely game the San Francisco real estate market.
You were talking about some of the down periods. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, you know, there's lots of times when you doubt what you're doing. Is it going to work?
Give me an example. Like maybe one specific time when you felt that way.
Well, for Dodo case, it hasn't really been the case. We've only been around for 3 or 4 months, and it's all been good.
What about before? You know, you got business after business. You got to have high hopes for these companies, and when they don't do as well as you thought, how do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, you feel dejected. You know, you feel like, God, what am I doing? I'm, you know, it's years of my life, and I have nothing to show for it except for, like, you know, some education, I guess. it was really bleak right kind of after Y Combinator for when I was involved with WebMind. You know, we were basically down to the last $100 in the bank. And we were like, we'd been working 6 months, three of us, we lived off of basically $20,000, three people for 6 months in San Francisco. And, you know, you're just exhausted at that point. And you're like, wow, you know, we're going to have to shut this down. And luckily, we were able to close a round of angel funding, and it was great. But there was a point there where we actually had to, get more servers booted up because we had this spike in demand, and we couldn't afford it. And we actually went to Firefox, who put us on their recommended add-ons list. We sheepishly asked them to take us off of their add-on list because we couldn't afford to be on there. but that ended up being really a happy time because then you can go to investors and you have a great story to tell them. Oh, we just need money for more servers. And all investors like to hear that kind of thing.
Yeah, they do. Did you get married to your wife recently?
Just under a year ago.
So was there a period through that that she said, "What am I doing marrying this guy? I should marry a guy who's got a good job. Google's just in the neighborhood here."
Yeah, you know, she never said that, but her father really drilled me when I asked. Could have seen him.
Hey, how's he feeling now? Did you take the check to him from Shopify and say, "Listen, are we good now? Can we have a whiskey here and just reminisce about the old bad times?"
Yeah, I'm going to do that once I get that check.
Is PayPal still holding on to your check?
Oh God, PayPal. I shouldn't bash on PayPal too much, but because they've really come around and they're being really helpful now. But there was a point where every product we were shipping was at a loss. So you know, most people think, oh, you take pre-orders and you have this money and it finances the whole thing. Well, like, cash flow has been a real headache for us. And PayPal at the beginning was, they were holding all of our money. They wouldn't give us anything. And then they thought they were helping us by only giving us 25% of our money, which, you know, that's not really helping us because we're still in the hole, you know, shipping products. So that was really tough.
How'd you pay Gabby?
I dug into my savings and, you know, I used what little money I had saved up to kind of get over that hump. But now, you know, now we're fairly over it. PayPal and Google Checkout still owes us a bunch of money, but we'll get it eventually. And Google Checkout, I was really frustrated with them because they had like over $100,000 of ours and we'd had all these emails back and forth. And at one point, I was like, "Can please somebody just call me so we can resolve this?" So it was like 20 emails back and forth, and the response was, "Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have phone support." I was like, "You have over $100,000 that belongs to our company, and you guys won't even call us?" That would really piss me off. But
yeah, that's the frustration that I have with Google. I love that everything's in the cloud. I love that they could automate everything. But you know what? That last mile, sometimes you need to have a human being at the other end of the phone, even if it's just to say, "Hey, we'll take care of it for you. We understand."
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. But we got over that too. I mean, these are all, you
know. I guess they're not used to people growing as fast as you did. 4 months ago, you weren't in business. You weren't selling anything.
Yeah, you know, I understand. I understand both Google Checkout and PayPal's situation. They, you know, I'm sure people try and steal money from them every day, and they've got to, you know, they've got to take fraud seriously. So, I mean, I understand that.
When did you know that you made it with this, with Dodo? I want to keep saying the name completely so people can go and research it. Dodo Case, DodoCase.com. We'll get into what the name means in a moment. But when did you know that it was going to work?
You know, actually, there was a moment, you know, when those the Engadget review and the unofficial Apple blog, those two reviews happened back to back on back to back days, and we saw a spike in sales. Like I said, it was tremendous. That was a really validating moment right there. So that was one. But you know, I mean, I still, any entrepreneur, you know, there's something that keeps you up at night where you're like, something could happen. It could all end tomorrow. So I mean, I don't think we've made it yet, but. You know, another real validating moment for me was Craig, my co-founder, and I were sitting in a cafe just having a meeting, and we had our Dodo Case out, and some complete stranger came up to us and said, "Hey, that's a Dodo Case, isn't it? How do you guys like that thing?" We were like, "Yeah, well, we're kind of biased, but it's the best case ever."
So. Oh, that's gonna be awesome. That's like if you're a rock band and you hear your music on the radio. Wait for the day when you go into a conference and there are a bunch of people with Dodo Cases on their laps.
Yeah, totally. I guess, you know, that was kind of that moment for us.
You know what? It seems like you never stop worrying as an entrepreneur. I talk to Fred Wilson. I read his blog all the time. I see a picture of him and his family walking down the beach so serenely. I figure this guy, he's got right ideas. He's later on in life. I see him walking down the beach. He must have not a care in the world. He said, "You know what, Andrew? Earlier this morning, I think he said at 3 a.m., he got up with worries. He said, I just can't get over it." Man, sometimes I think I just talked to a guy yesterday, or actually this morning, who worked at IBM and then turned it all in to go be an entrepreneur. I wonder what his life would have been like at IBM. Probably would have been a lot calmer.
Yeah, you know, a lot of those worries get taken away when you have a steady paycheck. But
yeah. On the other hand, we're inventing the future. 10, 20 years from now, when people look back at how life changed and how what influences their lives, it's going to be things like this. things like this case that somebody at home is sitting there right now saying, it's just a case. No, it's not. It's helping people reimagine what their interaction with the computer is. It's helping people introduce the iPad into places where they never would have been able to introduce it before, where they would have looked like freaks. I got to tell you, when you walk in, even with an iPhone, you say, I'm going to take notes on my iPhone, or with an iPad, say, I'm going to take notes on an iPad. To a lot of people, it's really weird. And so it becomes something you can't bring into a meeting and can't be as productive as you want to. You bring the Dodo case in there, and now it looks like something that people are familiar with. Now you're not just a freak who's going to play a video game. Now you're a guy who's got a notebook, but a little bit more advanced. And every business is doing that to some degree. What about the name Dodo? Why would you name your company Dodo? Where did that come from?
It came really kind of the idea was to play with the idea of this book going extinct. You know, everybody's talking about how the book's dying, and we thought, you know, well, let's make the emblem of our whole thing be the Dodo, because it's so fitting. You know, you have Penguin Books, and you have all these publishers that have kind of avian mascots, or whatever you want to call them. And we figured, let's have fun with it a little bit. And you know, just because the iPad's here and people are going to be getting their information on, you know, in pixel form instead of on paper, it doesn't mean that the art and the tradition of bookbinding needs to go away. We can just reinterpret it and reapply it to, you know, the next wave of technology. And I think that's what really gets me amped up about this business, is that, you know, it really is helping preserve this this tradition. And it's kind of a real cultural shift that's going on in society now. And it's nice to be a business that can help that transition happen a little bit more smoothly.
How much investment did you put into this transition business?
Oh, God. my own personal money, or?
Total, all you and your co-founder and anyone else.
Well, I mean, it was $500 in marketing to get started, but the prototyping and everything. And then, I mean, most of the money went in just to deal with cash flow issues. So, you know, you're talking $50,000 to $100,000.
Wow, you had $50,000 to $100,000 to invest?
Well, I mean, invest is a tough word. I mean, you got credit cards and stuff.
So. All right, and that's because you can't get access to your money until you've built the product and sent it out and gotten it in the hands of your customer. And PayPal releases it.
Right, and PayPal holds it for 45 days. So, I mean, I got to finance building the product, shipping it at a loss, and then waiting, you know, a month and a half to get money. And during that period of time, you know, there's definitely the risk of, like, hey, this is a new product. You send it to people, they might not like it. They might all return it, and then you're really screwed, right? You're like, damn, I just racked up $50,000 on a credit card. I thought I was going to get some money, and now I got a bunch of cases back. Luckily, that didn't happen. I mean, we really focused on making quality product, but you know, there was that risk. So,
and most people wouldn't have this kind of situation because they wouldn't have this explosive growth. This is a good problem to have, a high class problem, like they say, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining, but there was, like, you know, some fingernail biting at points.
So I do talk to a lot of entrepreneurs here who try one company, then another, then another, then another, and then bam, they take off with one. Do you have some advice for somebody who's going in that direction?
I guess that, you know, that old Winston Churchill quote, you know, never, never, never give up, is the kind of really fitting in that situation. And I guess, like, to elaborate on that, is just to make sure you've got a good support group behind you to keep your spirits high and to keep you trying new things, because, you know, you're going to fail and you're going to fall over, and you know, make sure you have people that love you around. And my wife, I could not have done this without, you know, her support and her patience, and you know, all of my friends here in the house also, you know, really putting up with sawdust in the living room and glue smells and fumes. And you know, for the first month, we were making all the Dodo cases right here. So,
awesome. All right. Well, thank you for doing the interview. And Thank you, Shopify, for introducing me to Patrick. I've been wanting to figure out who won the contest, and they slipped me your name, made the introduction. We agreed that we would do this interview quietly. It's not going to be a live interview. I'm not going to reveal your name. I'm not going to reveal any of the details until they're ready for me to do it, and I'm really grateful to them for introducing me to you. This is the kind of story, by the way, that my audience keeps wanting. They say, give me a guy who's got an idea that I can understand, that's basic, that doesn't need outside funding, that doesn't... That I'm not looking at and saying, ah, he's a whiz kid. He's an ex-Sergey. No wonder the guy hit it big. Give me a guy who's like us, who's willing to work hard and willing to come up with an idea that feels accessible and that can show us the way that that's done. And thanks for doing that.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a real pleasure.
Cool. And one more thing that's great, that you're a fan. You've actually seen my interviews. I love now that I'm doing interviews to this community and I'm getting to interview people who've been listening.
It's your rock star moment, you know?
The guy Sick. All right. It's as close as to the rock star moment as I've gotten so far. Maybe when I leave Buenos Aires and actually get back to California, I could walk into a cafe and hear somebody say, you know, I heard on Mixergy this morning. This is what I – for now, we got your rock star moment with the Dodo Case. Everyone check out dodocase.com. See what we've been talking about. See the business behind it. And Patrick, once again, thanks for doing the interview.
Thanks, Andrew.
Cool. Bye, bud.